Thank you very much, Mr. Kretschner. I've been asked to say a few words and possibly to introduce some music to you. I'm delighted to do this. On this festival, Mr. Samuels will conduct some new works and some revivals of older new works. The new works will be by Gordon Sear, and they will be lamentations for two sopranos and chamber orchestra. Robert Hughes' Kama Sutra ballet music will be new. It has had one performance, but will be revised for the festival. My own Labyrinth number 3 will be done, my largest percussion work. It has not been performed on the West Coast, though it has been periodically performed in New York. In fact, a month ago, just had another performance at the Guggenheim Museum. I have long wanted to hear it, and Maestro Samuel is humoring me. Of the older works of the modern repertoire, I am most looking forward to the Alban Berg Concerto, which was a great influence in my own musical life many years ago when the first recording was issued by the man for whom it was written, Louis Krasner. Also, Maestro Samuels is going to do the Threepenny Opera, a very popular and delightful work. I would like to introduce today, give you an idea of my own labyrinth, though I can't actually give you an idea, but I can skirt the area, and play for you a tape of the first performance of Robert Hughes' Kama Sutra ballet, and to attempt to explain the milieu in which these works exist. I had a request to hear the violin concerto, which was played at the 1965 festival. So I have brought that, and we will play at least one movement of it. I've had an interesting experience this year because I've been teaching at San Jose State College in ethnomusicology. I'm teaching a course called Music in World Cultures, which has been a great pleasure to me, if considerable work. But I have also attended other occasions at the college, and most recently an institute last weekend. I've also become acquainted with the head of the theory department and the young composers in the college. And I find to my delight that without any intermediate stages, I have become an old fuddy-dud. From being too radical to consider, I am now shelved as an old fuddy-dud. With one exception, and this is what has proved most interesting to me, and that is the field of percussion music. The young still do not regard this as akin with Perry and Stanford, but do regard it as a still living kind of music. Therefore, I just barely get in under the line, only by reason of that. All of my other works, no matter how radical in other areas, are regarded as quite old hat at the present time, largely because I write the notes down. Incidentally, for your amusement, the problem of notating contemporary music has become so aggravating to many musicians that the German radio union players are now demanding time and a half for unusual notations. If it isn't done on ordinary five-line staffs, now they get time and a half for reading the modern notations. I also pointed out that they could probably demand the same thing for Gregorian four-line notation in neumes. At any rate, it's a sensible idea. If you're doubling on an instrument, you get time and a half. You get extra pay. Why should you not to read a special kind of notation as well? Also, it gives those who have mastered new notations another instrument to play, another means of income. I found at San Jose this season that my prediction made during the war that 12-tone technique would conquer all of the academies has been absolutely true. To my dismay, 12-tone composition is now taught to 7-year-olds in the public schools in San Jose. My prediction was that it would, of course, become an academic stronghold for the simple reason that you can teach it and correct it, whereas there's no other modern technique that you can correct at all. I found one fascinating thing at the Institute, which was part of a national institute for the improvement of contemporary music education, and by that I mean use of contemporary music in education and in the schools and trying to improve in some way both the teaching of contemporary music and the use of contemporary techniques in music. One of the most fascinating things about that was the constant racing up and down the time track. And by this I mean, one school would present its researches and studies in contemporary music, and then someone would ask the question from the floor, how advanced is it? And everybody was hoping that they would be the most advanced. And there were great findings, it became hilarious, and everybody laughed at this idea. I pointed out that within the one culture, apparently periods are taken as a kind of stepladder, and everybody is frantically climbing up to, of course, where they are all the time, the present. There are two ways, of course, of finding stimulus and of considering new ideas musically, particularly musically, and they are the historical point of view and the ethnic point of view. We are very much committed as a Western peoples to the historical point of view, for we literally believe that no other people has a music. In fact, as Westerners, we are in nothing so ethnocentric as the art of music. Therefore, to attend a contemporary institute in music is quite exciting, because it gives constantly the image of people running up and down the time track, stopping at 18th century and then 14th and then 20th and so on, within a shaft which is sealed. Nobody lives around. It's just up and down the time track. No other peoples exist. It's a conviction, probably due to our cultural training, that nobody else exists and that we run up and down the time track. However, there is another point of view, and that is that there are other people who have done other things, and they have not been entirely fools. And it is this point of view to which I am most attached myself. I think that it's more exciting to find out about the music of other peoples than to scrape the bottom of our own barrel constantly, or try to think up something new within, though of course there's a certain amount that does come up that is new from our own background. Nonetheless, historically, of course, it is true that all of the major influences at any major turning point in music, it has always been another ethnic, the music of another people, that has been the stimulating thing. In short, hybrids are the really fertile ideas in music. I'd like, in fact, to read a notation from Henry Cowell, who was in the United States the leader of this kind of thinking. He was an extraordinary man. He founded what might be termed American experimental music almost single-handedly. When he started in the late teens and early 20s of the century, there were almost no contemporary composers writing advanced music in the United States who were being heard. He found two or three of them, encouraged them, and established a publication, which is still going on, called New Music Edition, which published only the advanced, the latest in new ideas in music. Mostly of the United States and South America, too, not necessarily of Europe, though a few were included. He said once, the only warning I wish to give you is against the feeling that any single style, any single technique is the only possible one, or the only good one, or the only important one. That kind of thinking is the source of all sterility. And then in Tokyo, at a conference which I attended, I heard him say this quote, today, no inherited style, no single acquired technique will enable a composer to live in the 20th century. Also, he said in Tokyo, apropos of this very thing, he said, don't put down the hybrids. And many people in the conference were doing that. They didn't like jazz done by the Japanese and Koreans, and they didn't like any kind of hybrid music. They thought this was distasteful in some way. And he said, don't put it down, don't put them down. And I took it on good faith because I have great respect for everything that he said. And until finally it dawned on me a couple of years ago, no, don't put down the hybrids because there isn't anything else. Our own music is, of course, an amalgam of musics of other cultures. Half of our instruments came from Arabic sources and so on. Everything that we have in the arts, and in particular in music, is hybrid, basically. So that the return to influences of other peoples around the world is an important step, the acceptance of these influences. Also, I think a corollary which might prove interesting is that we should refrain from imposing the international style invented by the West on the entire world. Are you aware that a country cannot get UNESCO credit as being artistic if it doesn't have a symphony orchestra? Well, really, there are other ways of making music. You don't have to have a symphony orchestra. This is an imposition from the West again, you see, making its own kind of prestige. Well, let me now play or ask my friend Ed to play the last movement of my violin concerto. This will refresh your memory from 1965. And I would like to thank Mr. Bennett for the very elaborate and wonderful acoustical system here, sound equipment. If we can find the last movement. This is an example of a hybrid. It's a Western violin playing with a percussion orchestra. And I should say that the impulse to make percussion music came originally from from the observation and listening to Oriental sources. Balinese gamelans, for example, which are ravishing to listen to, were a stimulus to Mr. Cowell, to John Cage, and to myself, who began the entire percussion movement in the United States. I am the author of the largest single body of percussion music. Here we go. Austin Reller and Gary Samuel. Thank you. That was a very good performance, as you can hear. It's still exciting to hear, isn't it? Now I'd like to play a work that is completely for percussion orchestra of my own, and it comes closest to almost the closest that I can find of works that I have, to the period of the Labyrinth, number 3, which Gary will be doing, and which we have the score of here, if you would like to look at it sometime. It's for 11 players, the work that Gary will be doing, and each of them is playing 4 or 5 different groups of instruments, so I'm afraid it's going to be a crowded stage. It's in 4 large movements, and composed, as I mostly do percussion, rather melodically. The piece that we'll play now was a performance done in the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and it's conducted by Paul Price, and it was a suite for 5 players that I composed in 1941, I believe. And this piece that Gary will do is completed in 1941, according to score, so it's fairly contemporary with it. In it, I have used automobile brake drums turned over, played in the rim, as you heard in the violin concerto, to you. And in this particularly, they sound Balinese. They sound quite gamelanish in this particular work. This is a very beautiful performance. Every nuance of my notation is there. When I wrote, as I did in my extravagant youth, 4 P's instead of just 2, which after all means the softest you can play. here you have to really listen, because the conductor saw to it that it was that way. And it's very, very loud when it is loud, so it's beautifully done. There are 3 movements, an allegro, a andante, and a finale. The andante makes a kind of baroque aria for temple blocks, and it's beautifully played with thunder sheets too. Every so often, you'll hear the 6th Avenue subway go through.
On the podium, and we'll hear the suite for percussion ensemble by Lou Harris. Thank you.
That's a beautiful performance, don't you agree? It's very, very difficult to play the brake drums so softly as the man did at that point. I'm full of admiration for the performance in that. That's Paul Price's Manhattan Percussion Ensemble, probably the best percussion group in the country, as a matter of fact, a permanently established one. They play constantly all over the Eastern Seaboard. I'm delighted that they took me up. Now, I would like to present Robert Hughes' Kama Sutra Ballet, a work which he did for Carlos Carvajal, and Carlos Carvajal and the San Francisco Ballet were unable to afford the instrumentation, so the work still stands as a musical piece instead of a complete ballet at the present time. The tape was made at the Spaghetti Factory in San Francisco on the occasion of its first performance last year, and is a quite good tape, as a matter of fact. It's for chamber orchestra, including such things as bass clarinets and contrabassoons, gongs suspended in washtubs full of water, so that when you lower them in and out and beat them, the tone, as you lower them into the water, the tone goes down, and then when you lift them up, the tone goes higher, so it goes. Also, this is a good example of mixing Oriental instruments with Western instruments and styles, because in it you will hear the two Chinese zhongs played, and you will hear Mr. Hughes himself play the piri, which is a Korean double reed instrument corresponding to the aulos in Greece, and a number of other percussion instruments plus more standard Western instruments. It's divided into four sections. I don't remember the names of them, but it has a low section, then a sudden explosion, and it's about different kinds of love. I think that's all I can say about it, except that it's a very beautiful piece.